Our cafe guest today is Betty Hu, a pop singer, songwriter originally from Australia, whose debut album, Take Me When You Go, is being released today. Betty came to the U.S. as a classical musician studying cello at Interlochen Music School. And then this 6'1 cellist became a pop singer. Her song, Somebody Loves You, was the music on an elaborately choreographed marriage proposal video shot in a Home Depot in Utah by a gay couple that has more than 12 million views. This song is on her album, Take Me When You Go, and she'll play it for us today. But first, here is Betty Hu with a performance of Heartbreak Dream. Well, there you go. That is a live full band version. We are honored that Betty Hu has brought the full band in for a session today on the cafe. That is one that you first heard on Slow Dancing, and now on the Finally Here album that we are very happy to have, Take Me When You Go.
from Betty Who. Hi, Betty. Thanks. It's great.
Hi.
Great to finally meet you.
Yes, you too. Thank you so much for having us on.
Now, Take Me When You Go contains a number of songs from both of your EPs, The Movement and Slow Dancing, and new songs that have you just been working on along the way?
Yeah, I wrote a bunch of these new songs over the past year. It's four songs from my first two EPs, and then the rest of them are brand new songs and brand new material that nobody's heard yet because we haven't played any of it live. We haven't done any of that. So I think it's very exciting, honestly, to have. We've been playing the same songs for the last year. So it's going to be kind of fun to play new material and do a new show and get to tell a different story, but still hopefully have somewhat the same message, which is just kind of, you know, love for yourself and for everybody. And joy, I think, is a huge part of what makes our shows really special.
And it was funny. I went back and looked at numbers for Somebody Loves You. Your video didn't do badly. 1.5 million views. That's pretty good.
Not too shabby.
Not at all. But it is completely dwarfed by the proposal video that Spencer and Dustin put together with the flash mob performance of it that... you know, you can't make something like that happen. There has to be a certain love for a song, and of course, their love for each other that makes that happen. And it's just a wonderful encapsulation of what you're about.
Oh, I think so too. That video, it's kind of, people refer to that video as my official music video sometimes, and I'm like, no, I have a video. That's not my video. No, it definitely is. You know, Dustin and Spencer and I always joke. I've become quite close friends with them since that video went up because, you know, they had kind of their own ride because of that video. And the internet is such a sensation. And it's so incredible now that, you know, they were on the Ellen Show and they came out and were on VH1 Big Morning Buzz when me and my band were on. And so I got to meet them and hang with them a little bit. And they always joke. They're like, oh, my gosh, like, thank you for letting us come to your show. And I'm like, no, you guys don't understand. You are bigger celebrities than I am. Like, you are far more famous. Your video has far more views. It's my honor to be in your presence.
And you got to play at their wedding. Did you play at the reception or during the ceremony?
I played during, oh my gosh, it was so beautiful. I played during the ceremony as their mothers walked them down the aisle. I was singing Somebody Loves You acoustically and my boyfriend was playing guitar. So it was kind of this really beautiful, like just moment filled with love. And I was holding back tears the entire time. And everybody else in the rows in front of me that I could see were bawling their eyes out. And the second I sat down and the ceremony began, I just cried the whole time. It was so beautiful and everyone there was so supportive and ready to love each other, which is kind of a really special moment to be a part of.
That's great. Well, can you get through it without crying today?
I'm sure we can manage it today.
Okay. Somebody Loves You, the song that was originally just a free download back in 2012. Finally on the album that is out now called Take Me When You Go, and we're getting a chance to hear some live performances today from Betty Who and answer the question, who is Betty Who? Well, let us take you back to Sydney. Let's go back to Australia, where you grew up. And when you decided to go to high school in Interlaken, which is a great music school, did your family completely move here for you and your education, or how did that work out?
They pretty much did. The way that it kind of initially happened was I was at the camp. I'd spent 2 summers at the camp, and at my second summer, my mom came to visit me for the final kind of like wrapping up of the shows at Interlaken that summer. And there was an audition scheduled to me at the academy, and I was like, I'm not going to get in. I don't want to do it. Like, I'm not a good enough cellist. I just don't care. And my mom was like, you need to experience in auditioning. What's the harm in trying? Just go for it. And so I went in and had this incredible conversation with the cello teacher at Interlaken. And I wasn't really a good enough cellist probably to be at the school, but he thought that I had a lot of musical potential and spunk. So pretty much I got led into Interlaken based on charisma, which is kind of funny. And my mom told me, she was like, you're going. And I was like, this is crazy. We have 2 weeks to move here. There's no way I'm doing it. And she was like, well, I'm calling your father and we're going to make this happen. And when she called my dad, he was like, we're not all moving to America. That's crazy, because he's Australian. And my mom's originally American. And so she was like, well, I'm coming and you can stay or you can go, but I feel like you should probably come with us. And they got a house that's not even, 2 miles from the school. And they have stayed there ever since, even when I left Interlaken. They love the area. Northern Michigan's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. So it's a whole new lifestyle for them now.
Wow. Now, were you exclusively a cellist then, or were you doing other kinds of music too?
I was always a singer, and I think it took me a really long time to become comfortable with that. I came from a culture of schooling before Interlaken where it was, you kind of couldn't win and you couldn't do anything that made anybody happy. So if you pursued music, everybody thought that you were kind of a show off and that you knew you were really good and oh, you think you're so good. But then if you didn't do music, everyone's like, why don't you do music? Like, you're really talented. So it's kind of like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't kind of thing. So it took me a long time to feel comfortable saying that I was a singer and that I wanted to be a songwriter and that I wanted to do this for a lifestyle. But I wrote my first song when I was 14. So when I went to Interlaken, I was already kind of spending a lot of time singing and a lot of time teaching myself piano and guitar and wanting to pursue that. And I definitely had more of a passion for what I'm doing now than I ever did for cello. I always loved it, but it kind of wasn't exactly what I needed, I guess.
I surmise that there's sort of an underground of pop music fans at a classical music place like Interlaken.
I don't know about that. It's not a dirty word by any means, but it's definitely not kind of the thing that everybody does at Interlaken. Although right. There is a lot of Britney Spears played at dances, so I guess you're probably right.
There you go. So what about your going to Berklee, which is a different kind of music school completely, I would think.
Yeah, oh, totally. Berklee was actually kind of, I had a really interesting experience there because I had the same experience initially when I got to Interlaken, which was that it was a bunch of kids who were all artists and were all totally out of their minds and just super excited to be doing what they loved. And that really resonated with me the first time I got to Interlaken. I was like, oh my God, these are my people. So when I got to Berklee, I kind of had the same experience, but tenfold, because I couldn't even really believe that there was an entire group of a student body that wanted to be playing music that wasn't classical. You know, I had spent a whole lifetime before that doing classical music and giving my life up to that. And when I got to Berklee, it was just so many kids who wanted to hear the new pop, the newest pop record that had come out. And, I got to play Earth, Wind & Fire and ensembles, and I got to play Chaka Khan. And I was like, this is kind of exactly what I need to get to where I want to go. And I think that Berklee really enables that.
And that was where you met Peter Thomas, who's been the producer and worked a lot with you on these songs. Tell me about his vision and your vision and where they kind of came together with this music, because it seems like a combination.
Oh, it definitely is. you know, when I went to Berkeley, I was a singer-songwriter. I was playing guitar and piano and singing these kind of ballady songs. And the first time I met Peter, I think he had a party at his house, and everyone was, you know, dancing, and it was kind of really high energy one of those nights in college. And so that's the setting in which he met me. And then I played him my songs, and he was kind of said, these are beautiful, but also don't really represent you in any way, shape, or form. You know, the girl that I met the first time was you, you know, clearing the dance floor so you could do your choreography to a Pussycat Doll song. And so for you to do that and then come into, you know, this house and play some really beautiful lovesick song, that's great. But also, where is all of your energy? And that's really important to me to capture. And so he and I spent a lot of time trying to find where I fit into pop music without kind of giving up myself to dance music entirely, because my songwriting ability and kind of the things that I love about songwriting stayed really important to me. And I never wanted to give up my lyrics or my stories or my experiences so that I could have a song that everyone could dance to. And Peter, I think, helped me get to that vision really smoothly. It took us a long time. We met when we were 18, and, you know, Somebody Loves You came out, which was the first song we officially put out in, you know, I was like 20 or turning 21 maybe. So it definitely was a lot of nights spent in his parents' basement in his like little makeshift studio writing and recording songs and then throwing them out again.
You know, it's interesting when you think of dance music, and sometimes dance music vocalists, if you go all the way to the EDM world, they can be faceless. It's just a voice, and that just is not possible with you.
I mean, right?
You start with your height, 6'2", and
sure.
and everything else. It just seems that you're certainly not made for that end of the world.
Right. I definitely stand out in a crowd. It's funny because it's hard. I think some singers, you know, if they show up to soundcheck or something, you could maybe miss them. Because if they're in a hoodie and they're, a girl who's 5'6", they could walk past you and you could think that it was anybody. And if I walk past you, I have like very short platinum blonde hair and I'm 6'2". And I also pretty much like to wear boots or heels all the time. So I'm probably anywhere between 6'2 and 6'5, depending on the day that you see me. So it's really hard to miss me. So I'm not very incognito in that way.
Definitely not. Betty, who is our guest today? And what do you guys want to do next?
I think we are going to play High Society. Morning, baby, turn your color up.
And that is High Society. Betty Who is playing live for us today on the cafe. And, you know, it's funny. You've talked about your songs being autobiographical. Where does that one come from?
High Society, actually, it's funny. Out of all the songs that are kind of autobiographical for me so much, not so much High Society. No, you know, I was a really big, to be perfectly honest with you, I was a really big fan of the TV show Gossip Girl.
Oh, yeah.
And High Society is kind of very influenced by that TV show, just because I think there was such people admired the kind of state in which the Upper East Siders of that TV show lived, and it's kind of so just out of control and not really normal for anybody that I know, at least. So it kind of was about the idea of pretending that you had a life like that, but mostly because you just love somebody and you know, with that person, you could be anything you wanted to be. You know, you could be living in a tiny one-bedroom apartment in Brooklyn, or you could be walking across the bridge at dawn, you know, in a Valentino gown, coming home from a night at being in a ballroom somewhere on the Upper East Side. And I kind of liked that juxtaposition of, if it doesn't really matter as long as I have you.
Ah. Well, you know, that's probably not the first song that's been inspired by Gossip Girl. So.
I think it's a very common thing to inspire a song.
Well, it's certainly a cultural landmark, that's for sure. Now, one thing I'm curious about is you've been here in the States and your career is kind of built up here in the States. Have you been home? Have you been back to, or is Australia feel like home, or does it?
You know, it's such a sad question. I actually haven't been home in a couple of years. Everything's been happening very quickly in America for me, and I've been so busy that I haven't had really a chance to take time off and go home to Australia. I call it home mostly because I still have a little bit of an accent, and I was born in Sydney. I was raised in Sydney. That's kind of where I think of my childhood being. But I think I'm far more American now, actually, sadly enough to say. I live in New York. I went to college in Boston. My parents live in Michigan. So when I go home to visit them, it's to Michigan. But I'm very, very excited to finally go back for the first time in, you know, years in November on the Katy Perry tour that I'm opening for.
That's great. Well, that's kind of perfect. That's how did that come about?
You know, from what I understand, Katy and Bradford, her manager, one of her managers, has been a fan of mine for a while, and I guess it kind of just worked out in our favor that we happened to have November not booked yet for another tour. So it kind of just worked out. They reached out to my manager, and they were talking for a long time before my manager told me anything about it, because he didn't want to get my hopes up, and he didn't want me to be like, we're going to go on tour with Katy Perry and then have it not happen. And so the first time he told us, we were all on, my whole band and I were on tour together, and he Skyped all of us, and he was like, well, I have something to tell you. And I swear, I thought someone had died and that he had like needed us to all be together so we could like grieve together. And he told us we were opening for Katy Perry. And at first we were like, oh my God. And then he said, in Australia. And we were like, oh my. So we started freaking out and we were like holding each other. It was pretty cool.
Thank you so much for being here. It's a
thank
treat.
You so much for having me. This has been a pleasure and honestly, such an honor. We, you know, I listen to NPR all the time, so this is very, very cool for me.
Oh, that's great. Well, good luck in Australia, and we'll
thank you.
We'll see you on the road. Betty Who is our guest, and we shall be back in a moment here on the World Cafe.